Hello and welcome to This Pagan Place, episode 3. It's Frankie Raincoat again, talking to you from the land where the sun shines and the snow falls simultaneously. I love it. I love it. I love it. I want to start with a book review, and today I'm going to review The Chicken Kabbalah. Ha ha ha. It's not really called that. It's just The Chicken Kabbalah by Lon Milo Duquette, published by Wiser Books in 2001. But this book is hysterical, freaking hysterical. I enjoyed it and read the whole thing. I loved it. Duquette is writing in the pseudo-persona of Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford, an irreverent teacher of Jewish mysticism whose favorite thing to say is, "Hell no, you're a chicken Kabbalist. Don't worry about it." I find this to be a very refreshing attitude when it comes to the Kabbalah. I studied it for a while with a teacher, and I couldn't get my head around it and all the meanings and correspondences. I had a lot of trouble really learning it. And I think I was taking it just way too seriously and worrying about getting it right just too much. His next favorite thing, the rabbi's next favorite thing to say, and Mr. Duquette loves it too, is, "It's all in your head. You just have no idea how big your head is." And I love this. It makes perfect sense. I've always felt like so many of these occult and paranormal things like ghosts and gods, which I believe in, are figments of my imagination. And at the same time, part of the outer world or the real world. So it makes sense to me that it would all be in my head. It's just that my head encompasses the real world. The tone of this book is as tongue-in-cheek as it gets. It's very irreverent. But the author is still clearly knowledgeable about the Kabbalah and serious about it. But what he brings to it that most authors do not is an understanding of what is important and what is not. For instance, he writes, "Even the laziest chicken Kabbalist needs to learn the Hebrew alphabet and at least some of its traditional correspondences." And in the same chapter, he declares, "Hell no, God's a chicken Kabbalist and doesn't worry about it." And that's an answer to the age-old question, does God speak Hebrew? So the chapter I'm talking about outlines the Hebrew alphabet with its names, pronunciations are unimportant, numerical values, which are very important, and some colorful ways to remember what they look like. The letter Tau, he points out, looks like a resh holding a dead dolphin by the tail. And resh is another letter. While the letter lamed looks like a snake that has swallowed a brick and is now having second thoughts. The book uses various devices to explain the different aspects of the Kabbalah. And in the chapter about the four worlds, which is a part of my studies that I had particular difficulty with, he puts in a script to a documentary reputedly written by this Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford. And the main motif of this documentary is the universe as a building with four floors, which represent the four worlds. The first floor represents Asaya, the material world, where we are now, specifically the chair division of said material world. Lots of nice comfy chairs to rest in. The second floor is Yetzira, the second world, the formative world, where the chairs are designed and engineered before being produced. And the script calls for, you know, some geeky engineer angel types. Going to the third floor, we come to Thomas Edison's shower. And this illustrates the world where the chair is first imagined or conceived. Bria, I believe, is this the name of this world. The fourth world is Atzeluth. And rendered in this so-called documentary, it's rendered as a formless cloud. "Up here in Atzeluth," the rabbi would tell us if this documentary ever got made, and I wish it would, "there are no forms or images, just pure conscious energy, a dynamo of bliss." This is the world before things are separated out. So complete union, but so complete it's not even union because it was never separated yet in the first place. After reading this chapter, this documentary telescript, I don't have the names memorized, or I don't have any idea really which exact sephira belong to which world, because each sephira is assigned to one of these worlds. But I came away with an understanding of the four worlds and their natures, and I feel like I understand them in a way I never really could before. I could rattle it off, but I never really had a good understanding. So I would recommend this book for the student at the beginning of her Kabbalistic studies to use in conjunction with a more, I don't know, serious book, I guess, on the Kabbalah. A book with clear explanations of the Ten Sephirah, the names and correspondences, and all the paths and such. And this book does have those things, but you might want a more complete and detailed book. But when you don't understand something or have trouble melding some part of your studies with a part of your brain that learns stuff, just lighten up and consult the Chicken Kabbalah, Lon Milo Duquette.
This is Luckylicious from Eat My Pagan Ass, a pagan podcast that believes dirty jokes can save the world. Enlightenment doesn't have to be dull. Join us in blurring the lines between the sacred and the profane. Be offended, be enlightened. It's all the same to us. Rules. Who needs them?
If you don't like it, will you get eat my pagan ass?
Never underestimate the power of humor. Visit eatmypaganass.com or search Eat My Pagan Ass on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes.
Our tarot card for today is the Five of Pentacles. I'm not going to shuffle and draw it. I'm not going to record the shuffling and the drawing of it. It seems a little bit loud, obnoxious, and plus, I did it before, I did it earlier today, and made notes, so I won't be pulling it out of my ass as I have done in the past. The card is the Five of Pentacles, not the best card, not the most desired card. When looking at the pip cards, which are the numbered cards, the first thing you want to do, or rather the second thing, is to consider the number and the suit. The first thing you do is look at the card and see what there is to see. But the second thing is you take the number and the suit, and you look at those together. So fives indicate loss or conflict, or they can indicate a test of some sort. And pentacles symbolize material or physical things. They're attached to the earth element, indicate financial matters, the garden, your physical health, and so on. So you have a five plus pentacles, which can show a financial loss or conflict, or physical loss or conflict. The image on the Rider-Waite card shows a conflict between the status quo, which for the two figures in the card is poverty, and a change-up, which is symbolized by the pentacles in the window. But the pair are going to have to do something a little different to change their status quo. The taller figure insists on trudging ahead, which they may have been doing for a long time, and to no avail. People often grow used to and even attached to their difficulties and hardship. They identify with their poverty or their illnesses or the injuries, and they don't have the will or inclination to change themselves or change their lives. So at first glance, and a valid way of looking at this card, it seems to be a very dark and fearful card. But try to look at it as a transitional card instead. It may indicate a dark night of the soul, but nights end. They invariably end. Morning comes. The man on the crutches is beginning to look up to see the window. And this window is obviously a church window, but I like to think of it as the window to a Unitarian church. They often host pagan events, are very open and accommodating, welcoming. Nonetheless, it's a church, and a church represents rest and respite from one situation on a physical level. And it can also indicate your inner soul or your inner light on a metaphysical level. It's there. The church is there, and your heart is there. But it's going to require a willful act to access these things. In the picture, the two people must make and carry out a decision to go inside the church. So what the card may be telling you, should you draw it, is to look inward to your higher wisdom to find your strength and solutions. Some Five of Pentacle actions to take include take better care of yourself, look after your health. The man on the crutches is clearly injured because his foot is all wrapped up in a bandage. But it'll get better if he looks after his injury and doesn't let it get infected or anything. So take a hard look at your attitudes, how they affect your perceptions and therefore your life. Do they make you feel like an outsider? Do they alienate you from making beneficial changes in your life? If so, they're your attitudes. You can change them. Or at least ignore them and enter that church. There may very well be a delicious church potluck in progress that you could partake in. So also figure out what you're doing to limit yourself, your progress, how you can change your viewpoint and get out of the snowstorm. And it's this that makes the Five of Pentacles a transitional card. It offers a choice. It indicates that it is time to make a decision, and your decision might be to carry on the way you have been, to maintain the status quo, although it also kind of indicates that the status quo is no longer serving you. For a more literal look at the card, we see two people who are loyal and devoted to each other through their difficulty, perhaps even because of their difficulty. Another literal look at the card could prompt you to ask yourself if you've rejected a religion or belief system without replacing it. Loss of faith can be a major psychological event and can plunge a seeker into a very dark night of the soul. How do I know that? That's another podcast. I do want to talk a little bit about the darker aspects of this card. I mean, it can also indicate that these two have been rejected from their society, which is represented by the church. Then the card becomes one of loneliness, hopelessness, anxiety, being excluded. Also, notice the bell around the man's neck. On a basic level, a bell is a means of communication. Church bells, calling, communicating that it's time to go to worship or what have you. He may, however, be communicating that he has a disease like leprosy. So according to that fount of knowledge, Wikipedia, in the Middle Ages, lepers wore a bell to announce their condition as much as to attract people with spare change. As with so many other tarot cards that seem very dark and hopeless at the outset, closer inspection and contemplation, the Five of Pentacles invites us to transform ourselves. And in this case, I would say that the transformation is sparked by going within and really searching for your light.
So merrily it joined my heart, they twined so cleave.
It's Beltane, the pagan Valentine's Day. Beltane is all about fire and sex and dancing around the bonfire, slinky outfits. It's often, very often warm out this time of year. Often finally warm out. And where I live, there's an All Species Day event. It's not in my actual city. It's about 45 minutes away, but I love to go. Love to dress up and see everybody all dressed up in their favorite, or as their favorite animals or species. It's very pagan, very rooted in the nature of the place, and kind of dirty and gritty, earthy. I'll try to post a video or two in the show notes on my blog. I think there's a couple out there on YouTube. And my blog is thispaganplace.blogspot.com. This is a really great interactive ritual. It starts with a gathering in a big field surrounded by some woods. The elements and directions are called with much pageantry. There's lots of pageantry. There's a parade through town, through the middle of the town, and a maypole. And the best part of this is that a lot of it, including the maypole, takes place on the grounds of our state capitol. I love that. So I would love to talk about sex and love, since that's such a large and wonderful part of this holiday. But let's skip over the sex, because I'm not one to share gory details of any sort. A lot of pagan podcasts I listen to do a show on love and love spells on Valentine's Day. But I wasn't podcasting at that time, and what I do have to say at Valentine's Day is pretty succinct, and that's bah humbug. But Beltane's a different story. It's a great time for lots of things. The veil is thin at this time of year, just as it is at Samhain. So it's a good time for psychics and tarot readings and love spells. So let's talk a little bit about love spells. I did one about a year and a half ago, several months before I started dating my husband. And I already knew him. We'd already met through some friends. But I didn't think I liked him very much. And sometimes it takes a little while to figure these things out. In fact, I had someone else on my mind that I was trying not to target with my spell. It's best not to target a specific person when doing a love spell. I suppose there's an ethical reason for that. There are ethical reasons for that, having to do with free will. But my reason is that if you're casting a spell to draw this specific person to you, then the whole thing clearly requires more work than it should, in my not-so-humble opinion. The spell I did was more a conversation with the magic. I laid out very clearly, with pen and paper, the traits I wanted in a lover, and I also thought very carefully about what I did not want. When doing magic, everything should be in the positive. Your stated intentions are what you want and how you want it. To say something like, I intend to draw a person who does not do this or does not do that or the other thing, leaves things vague. The magic knows what you don't want, but what do you want? Nonetheless, I went through very carefully about the traits I did not want in a lover so that I could better think and therefore state what I did want. So for instance, I would not want to be with someone who is a conservative Christian. Why would I? Bisexual and pagan, it would never work out. But I didn't care if my lover shared my faith exactly, but I wanted somebody with a mind open enough to accept this aspect of my life. It's a very important aspect of my person, of myself. Especially since at the time I was with a coven, and we met every full moon and every Sabbat, and that can be 3 times a month. But one thing I really didn't care about was the gender. My future sweetie pie. So I wrote all this down. The other thing I did was I made a Freya's Day perfume. It contains patchouli, which is fashionable to dislike these days, I think, and I'm fashionable that way, but I use the patchouli anyway, and I still wear it now and again when I think to on Fridays. It came out of a book called The Goodly Spell Book by Dixie Dearman and Steven Rasmussen. It's a big fat book. It's full of good, solid information. I really like it. And one of the reasons it's a good book is because it explains the magical theory behind the spells and potions that they have in there. For instance, the ingredients listed for this Freya's Day perfume are amber oil, patchouli essential oil, and lotus or eucalyptus oil. And they tell you that the amber symbolizes femininity, the patchouli masculinity, and the lotus or eucalyptus represent your spiritual bond with the future mate. So this knowledge will, with this knowledge, you can substitute wisely. In the end, I used this amber resin stuff you can buy. This has a very strong smell to it, very sweet. I used some patchouli essential oil and eucalyptus oil. I mixed in some almond oil as a carrier. Now this is clearly for a heterosexual relationship, but for a single sex relationship, you can use this knowledge to concoct your own scent, your own perfume, or your own incense. Just find two oils that are feminine or two masculine scents or herbs to make the perfume, and there you have it. I don't remember too many other details about my working that I did that night, but if I were going to give you any advice, I would say start with some red or pink candles, include some nice rose quartz on the altar, burn incense that includes rose petals, lemongrass, jasmine, maybe lavender, beautiful flowers of any sort, but especially roses on the altar. Whatever kind of roses you like best are helpful. Do the work on a Friday. Call upon Aphrodite or Freya if you have relationships with either of those two ladies. Friday, after all, is named after the goddess Freya, as you may well know, which is why love spells are very traditionally done on Friday. The next spell I have is from Utica Illich's book, Earth Mother Magic. It's now out of print. I think it was published in 2000 or 2001. And it's kind of pricey on half.com, but it's a lovely reference book to have. It's very pretty and flowery and could be called fluffy, but I find myself going to it no matter what, whenever I'm getting ready to do a spell or make an incense or anything. And this spell is for making a specific person to really fall for you. So it's best used if you are already dating or seeing someone and you want to give the whole deal a final push. First thing you do is scare up a photograph of you and your beloved having a nice time somewhere together. You can piece it together from other photographs or pictures if necessary, but it's important that it be a picture of just the two of you having a good time, being happy. And use your imagination. It can be as plain or fancy as you want. Maybe embellish it with images of love and romance, you know, wreath it in a collage of flowers or golden lights or what have you. When you have your picture all set, you put together these herbs. Half a cup of calendula blossoms, 1 cup of pink roses, the petals usually, 2 drops of chamomile essential oil, and 2 drops of rose attar, which is pretty expensive, by the way, so you may have to be creative here. Now draw yourself a nice warm bath, dim the lights, light the candles, maybe play some soft music. Then throw in your herbs and tape the picture up where you can gaze on it while you lounge in the tub. And repeat any affirmations or spells for your future happiness. I might also add that if you do have a rose quartz piece of jewelry, a necklace or earrings, wear them. This last one is not a love spell really. It's a love potion and it's from the website www.cantrap.net. It's a really interesting site. It has a lot of advanced stuff and kind of unusual stuff. And this particular potion is called Lust Dust. And it comes from the section on sex spells rather than love spells. And I won't recite the ingredients and amounts exactly here, but I'll include a link in the show notes. So it uses some dried herbs, some essential oils, and some resins. And for incense, that's a good Those three groups of items will make an appearance. So dried herbs, you need to find some lemongrass, some lemon balm, lavender, jasmine flowers, patchouli, and of course rose petals, pink or red. For essential oils, you'll need jasmine, rose, eucalyptus, sandalwood, and vanilla. Some of these can be pretty expensive. So one way around this is to make it all up, put everything together that you have, and then take your potion, your jar bowl, to the little store that sells essential oils, if you are lucky to have one nearby, and have them add the essential oils directly to your potion. So let's say you need 3 drops of jasmine oil. It's very expensive, and they'll probably sell you 3 drops. Then you crush up some benzoin and copal resin into the mixture, and there you have some love potion. Smells really good. I've made it a couple of times and it is divine stuff. After you make it, use your willpower and refrain from using it for 2 or 3 months. The longer you let it sit, the better it smells, and it's worth it. What you do with it is up to you. I always burnt it as incense or as a little offering to Aphrodite. I suppose you could let it steep in some almond oil and use it as a perfume. I find it to be a pretty feminine potion. And when I used it in a love spell many years ago, I ended up with a lovely girlfriend that I dated for about 1.5 years. So bear that in mind. Some of this stuff can be powerful magic indeed. So always remember and never forget to consider all the repercussions of your magic may have on yourself and others. Good rule of thumb. That's what harm none means. So that's Beltane, or rather one aspect of Beltane. So go out there and enjoy the weather, enjoy the day, and enjoy the season. We're going to close with the song Beltane Fires by Gaia Consort from their album Secret Voices. They have many great albums. That's just one of them. The opening piece was from Mark Gunn, found on Music Alley, called Titania, Wake My Sweet Queen, from his album Soul of a Harper. We heard a quick promo from the podcast Eat My Pagan Ass. Great podcast. Listen to every single one. And in the middle there, we heard In May That Lusty Season from Libana from their album A Circle Is Cast. So this is Beltane Fires by Gaia Consort.
Mothers of the merry begotten, a health to the maiden with the fiery eyes, a health to the crone that smiles beside us. On the other side of a Beltane fire. A health to the sweet rain gently falling down on the earth so fair, a health to the wind that gales around us and feeds the passion of a Beltane fire. A health to the lovely green-eyed Susan, she whose heart is my delight.